geez, I haven't gotten a flu shot yet, have you?
No, I haven't had mine yet.
Are you going to get one?
I'm hoping to get one.
Well, I hope to as well. So let's get started. Hello again, I'm Mark Huffman in the United States.
And I'm Laura McKeever in the United Kingdom, and this is RX411, your prescription for health information.
And it just might be the first transatlantic health podcast giving you the information you need to stay healthy. At least we're going to claim it. Laura, we were just talking about flu shots and flu vaccinations, and there's one thing I've always been curious about. You know, most vaccinations, it's one and done, but a flu shot, you have to do it every year. Why can't I just get one flu vaccination and be done with it?
Well, this has a lot to do with how spectacularly the flu virus mutates. So it mutates on an annual basis. So unlike a lot of the viruses we vaccinate against, the flu is quite smart, I think is the best way to put it. So it evolves every year over a period of moments, unlike us humans, where we evolve over periods of generations. And as a result of this, the flu vaccine that was effective in 2017 isn't going to be effective in 2018. Those, you know, types of flu are gone, they're done with, and new ones have come to harm us in 2018. Because the virus changes, the vaccine has to change too. The vaccines have to keep up with them. And generally, we'll use a vaccine that covers the forms of flu that are most likely to hit us and to hit us hard. So not only is a once-only vaccination not likely to work, it's also not possible. We're never going to change the fact that the flu virus mutates at a spectacular rate. So our best chances at preventing the flu are to adapt the vaccine accordingly and then have the vaccine.
And it's kind of a best guess, isn't it? I mean, they don't really know exactly what the flu is going to be like when they come up with a vaccine, right?
No, they don't. It is a best guess, and it's a very well-educated guess, and it's something that's studied, tracked, monitored, and adapted throughout the year. The vaccines will all sort of meet the same criteria in terms of their basic content. What changes is the virus, the dead form of the virus that they are then inserting into the vaccine to make sure that we're not susceptible to that particular strain of flu.
And the influenza virus, you know, in the past killed millions of people. I mean, 1918, there was a huge outbreak, I read in the history books. And people still die from it, but not nearly as much. And it doesn't really make news, but people still die from it. I remember being a child and being part of my whole town being vaccinated against polio. We all went to a central location and took the vaccine, and that disease has virtually disappeared.
Yeah, no, that's, polio is quite an interesting case because I think as current figures stand, we've managed to achieve 80% elimination worldwide. That is sort of slowly on the decline because people are striking back against vaccines a bit. So far, we've only successfully eliminated one disease, which is smallpox. And according to the World Health Organization, that saves about sort of 5 million people from dying per year. So it's the only example we have of full elimination. If we were to sort of push for people to, you know, have vaccines for diseases like polio en masse, providing that there are no legitimate medical contraindications, I don't see any reason why we wouldn't reach the same success that we reached with smallpox.
You know, in recent years, we've seen these active movements against vaccinations, especially vaccinations in children. What's behind that?
There are several things. So I'm hoping you're okay with me sort of having a bit of a verbal essay.
Please do.
Okay. So I think it all started with a piece of research, and we'll use the term research quite loosely, that was published over here in a medical journal called The Lancet. It's quite a prominent medical journal, so it's one to take seriously. The research came from a doctor called Andrew Wakefield, who had looked into the link between autism and vaccines in a group of 12 children. That's quite a small focus group for any scientific study. Wakefield tweaked the results. He left certain things out, including the fact that the research was being sponsored by people who wanted to prove his claim. That's quite unethical. And also the study wasn't possible to repeat, which is a basic criteria for all studies. By the time The Lancet retracted this study, tabloid newspapers had seized on it, celebrities had seized on it, and they all left out the part about the fact that Wakefield was later sort of, you know, struck off as being a doctor, and that, you know, his studies were largely inaccurate. At the same time, you know, autism was starting to get a lot more recognition. There was a strict diagnostic criteria introduced, and so autism rates were naturally rising in line with the number of vaccines that children were having. From a layman's perspective, to be fair to people who believe that vaccines cause autism, this does look like vaccines cause autism. However, correlation and causation in science are not the same thing. It's got far more to do with the fact that diagnostic criteria has improved significantly over the last 30 years. That's going to lead to an increase in autism rates by default. It's always been there. It's just that we're recognizing it more. It doesn't have anything to do with vaccines.
Is there any particular research out there that may be conducted since that report came out that might debunk some of these anti-vaccination theories? Something we can maybe reassure parents with?
Absolutely, yeah. There's a lot of research, but if I was going to pick one piece in particular, it was a study that was published in a journal called Vaccines, quite appropriately, that looked at, you know, the potential link between autism and having a vaccination. It analyzed 1.2 million children. So if you compare that figure with the 12 who were looked at in Andrew Wakefield's research, and it found that there is no link. And no link whatsoever. It sort of excluded every possibility that a vaccine could cause autism. No links were found. And this was something called a meta-analysis, which is like the holy grail of research. Unfortunately, we're still studying this to death and trying to prove it to death. And people either aren't listening or they won't listen. And I think the next stage of our battle is really to make the studies and their results, and I don't mean this in too patronizing a way, as reassuring and as digestible as a Pinterest infographic. You know, this information is out there. It just needs to be more accessible to people, especially parents.
And you bring up a good point. What role has social media played in spreading some of this misinformation?
Quite a deadly role. And I don't want to be too sensationalist, especially as Pinterest and the like can be quite helpful in a lot of ways. But it's very easy to spread misinformation via a Pinterest post. You don't know who the information is coming from. You don't know whether the pictures that are being included are actually relevant to the message that's being delivered. One post that I see quite frequently is a screaming and in pain baby with this massive needle going into its arm. You know, the needle isn't even the size that we would use for vaccines. It's usually one that we would use to like reinflate a lung that's collapsed. So social media, I think things have a tendency to snowball. You see how things go viral. You know, to use a completely different example with individuals such as celebrities, like they go viral quite often. So does misinformation about vaccines. And once one person hears about it and then they spread it to their 800 friends, he'll spread it to another 200 friends. You can see how it gets out of hand.
Sure. And by the middle of the 20th century, vaccines had pretty much eradicated smallpox and lots of other really nasty diseases. If vaccinations fall off and we're not vaccinating at the rate that we used to, are we likely to see a resurgence of some of these diseases?
I think so, definitely. I think the example I'm going to use, that's one that I'm most familiar with, is how we've vaccinated against tuberculosis in the UK. So when I was 13 years old, the TB vaccine was given out in schools, and it was done so for a few years afterwards. And then someone somewhere in our government looked at the TB rates and went, oh, hey, you know, they're sort of not as bad as they are before. We've got fewer people with tuberculosis. We can stop with the public sort of health scheme that promotes vaccinations now, as in free vaccinations in schools. And in the years that followed, TB just you know, it rose again significantly, especially amongst very vulnerable people, members of the homeless community, people who are coming to live in the UK for the first time. And so they're now looking into reintroducing the TB vaccine in schools to rectify this. And so I think that's just one small example, just from one country, and importantly, a country where public health is quite good. And, you know, it's part of the developed world. If this is happening in other areas where people are far more vulnerable and their access to healthcare isn't as good, we wouldn't stand a chance of eradicating a disease like TB.
And so I'm guessing your advice to parents would be to give your children the vaccinations that the doctor suggests.
Absolutely. And, you know, the doctors will look at whether there is a genuine medical contraindication. So I understand that there are certain groups of children who are immunocompromised from birth. They're also the ones who are going to suffer the most when herd immunity doesn't arise from people having vaccines. Unless your doctor specifies that your child definitely can't have a vaccine, it's the best thing to do is to have it. I mean, it's always good to sort of question and have conversations with medical professionals and take charge of your health. But the evidence supporting the use of vaccines is overwhelming.
Okay, Laura, well, we'll leave it there. Remember, you can always get the latest health news and helpful advice at rx411.com, your prescription for health information. Until next time, I'm Mark Huffman.
And I'm Laura McKeever.
Reminding you to eat your vegetables and stay well.
And roll up your sleeves and get a flu shot.
Oh, that too. So long, everybody.